Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Spring Semester 2017. Lecture 19, delivered on April 10, 2017. The title of this lecture is Portfolio Construction.
Tonight, Portfolio Construction. We're coming down towards the end of our happy time together as a family, or not maybe, but it'll be chapter 12 this week and then chapter 13 next week. And then the week after that, we review and test. So we are coming down towards the end of it at this point. And in these last chapters, you're sort of getting some closure, putting it all together. And tonight, we're talking about the portfolio construction itself, how you build the portfolio, how you know what you have built in terms of its risk level in the of the portfolio, the expected return of the portfolio, and all of that. Now, I thought I knew how to do this, and suddenly I can't do it again. I'll do it up here. First thing I'm going to do is show you how to, I'll build a baby portfolio. Just to bring up a couple of things. Now, this math in this is definitely not rocket science. And I will use finance.yahoo.com to get the information we need. So we're going to do portfolio construction, and I'm going to use finance.yahoo.com to do this. And this is going to be a baby portfolio. Obviously, you would not want to create a portfolio that was this small with only two stocks. But for the purposes of this, I'm going to say let's create a portfolio that has Target as one of the two stocks in it. Now, Target closed out today at 53.79. So 53.79 is going to be the price of the stock, Target, TGT. It's TGT, not TTG. TGT, 53.79. Now, Netflix will be the other one, NFLX. And Netflix is coming off right now. Oh, let me put down the beta while I'm here. The beta of Target is 0.24. Wow. Wow. Thank you. Okay. So Target 53.79. Its beta is 0.24. So this is a very safe stock. Netflix, on the other hand, is a security that's coming off at a little higher price, if I recall. NFLX is coming off at 143.85. Looking up there again to make sure I didn't transpose two numbers. Okay, and the beta on Netflix, beta of Target is 0.24, and the beta of Netflix is 0.77. First things first, what we're going to do is let's get the weights in the portfolio. Taken all together, let me pull up a calculator. Don't try to do this on my own. I've been rather bad at doing arithmetic calculations here the last few days. Calculator. So I'm going to do 143.85 plus 53.79, 197.64. Now, of course, I would be buying a round lot, so the actual portfolio numbers would be 100 times this, but it won't matter to the calculations I'm going to do. First things first, the weight of Target, W sub TGT, is going to equal 5379 over 197.64. The price of the stock divided by the value of the portfolio. The weight of Netflix will be 143.85 over 197.64. Okay? So I'm going to do 5379 divided by 197.64. I could have just saved that. And that's a 27% weight in the portfolio. So if I just buy these two stocks straight up, one round lot of each, the weight, value weight of Target is going to be 27, about a fourth of the portfolio, and the value weight of Netflix will be just around three-fourths of the value of the portfolio. Now, moving along here to the next part of this, then, we can now figure out a couple of things. First things first, the beta of the portfolio is going to be the weight of Netflix, the weight of Target, TGT, times the beta of Target, plus the weight of Netflix times the beta of Netflix. So in this case, what I'm going to get here is the weight of Target is 0.27 times the beta of Target, 0.24, plus the weight of Netflix, 0.73, times the beta of Netflix, 0.77. And as far as weights go, I mean, the book's going to ask you for its own, or your tests are going to ask you for their round to 2 decimal, 4 decimal, 6 decimal, whatever. For most purposes that we do this in our own personal portfolios, if you're just doing hand calculations, 2 decimal places is not going to hurt you. So I'm going to just do the 0.27 times 0.24 plus 0.73 times 0.77. And I get a beta of the portfolio of approximately 0.63. Notice here that the portfolio's beta is skewed toward Netflix because it has a higher weight in the portfolio. If you did not want that to happen, you would have to ratchet up the how much of Netflix you were, I'm sorry, of Target you were putting in at the expense of Netflix. Okay, now the next thing. Netflix is being forecast, let me draw that down here a little bit. I'm going to do something here. Bear with me. Oops, I didn't want to do that. Netflix is being projected 1 year out to be 151.38. Oh, I'm sorry. Price of Netflix 1 period out is 151. And the price of Target, is going to be 61.10. $61.10. So what we can do now is we can get an expected return. The expected return to Target would be $61.10 minus 53.79 over 53.79. The expected return to Netflix would be 151.38 minus 143.85 over 143.85. There you go. So now we can get the expected returns to these two. For Target, 61.10 minus 53.79 equals divided by 53.79. A 13.59% return is, and watch my numbers. My hands are not working too well. Would that come out to be 13.59%? For Netflix, my expected return is going to come out to be 151.38 minus 143.85, all of that divided by 143.85, 5.23%, I think. Okay, now we can get the expected return to the portfolio. The expected return to the portfolio is going to be the weight of Target times the expected return to Target plus the weight of Netflix, NFLX, times the expected return to Netflix, which would be the weight of Target is 0.27 times its expected return, 13.59%, plus the weight of Netflix, which was, what was Netflix, 73.73, times its return, 5.23%. Now we can get the overall, which would be 0.27 times 13.5 plus 0.73 times 5.23. It's about 7.46% return. I mean, this isn't rocket science. You know, this is just arithmetic of weighted averages and all that, but still, just the arithmetic of weighted averages, but still, the real problem here, of course, is that if your portfolio gets big, that means that you've got to do all of these extra calculations along the way. A lot of, like 30 stocks is going to be a lot of calculations, so that's when you want to begin to get Excel involved in the calculations to do the bigger portfolios. Also, by the way, you can do the same thing with the weighted averages for the P/E ratios to get sort of like a rough calculation of the P/E ratio of your portfolio. You can do it for other things too, but mostly for your portfolio. Notice that Netflix, being the heavier stock in the portfolio, will have more impact on the beta of your portfolio. That's one of the reasons why when you begin to pick stocks, it's better to just survey stocks that have betas that are in a certain range. You say, all right, I want to have my portfolio have a beta somewhere between 0.5 and 0.6. The easiest way to achieve that is to just make sure that the components of the portfolio have betas in that range. That way it will fall, the portfolio will fall somewhere in there. Now, here's the big problem, though. When you're building your own portfolio, this will change. These stock prices will move against each other. They will not move at the same rate up and down, which means that over a year, or probably even less than that, your weights of the portfolio are going to change, your beta of the portfolio is going to change, and your expected return to the portfolio will change. And they'll all do so without your permission. So that's why you would have to keep rebalancing and checking your portfolio over and over again to make sure that it was still somewhere in the range you wanted. I have seen people who worked on their portfolios, but they just set it up. And then you're looking at it a year, 2 years later, and the beta is somewhere way away from where they had it when they started. And they seemed a little bit surprised how far beta can go. As, for example, if Netflix goes up strongly against Target, this portfolio will move much more toward the high end of the beta range between them. It'll stay in that range somewhere between 0.27 and 0.73. But in this case, notice that if Target and Netflix do what the prediction that the forecast says they will do, 61.10 and 151.38. The portfolio value will go to 212.48, which bought 61.10 over 212.48 and 151.38 again over 212.48. Just really quickly, and I won't go through the whole calculation, but you'll see what's going on here pretty quickly, that once I start this, and I exited the calculator unintentionally, 6110 divided by 212.48 the weight in the portfolio has risen to 29%. Well, that's not too bad. I mean, you know, it's a little bit, the weights have changed enough that I am a little bit, I notice it. And so the beta of the portfolio is going to slip somewhat, just because the lower beta has a higher weight now. It's not too severe in this case, and I think a lot of people would probably ignore a weight change of this. However, it's still a matter of portfolio control. You let it go on too long, and it will get to be significant as stocks move up and down against each other. Now, what was I going to say? Here's the thing. In order for you to make a portfolio that is well diversified, you're going to need, if you do it this way, you're going to have to build the portfolio with stocks that 30 stocks at a minimum. 30 stocks at a minimum. And you are going to have to make sure that they have low correlations against each other. So going back to something that I had shown you earlier, last week or the week before that, Portfolio Visualizer now, I think I even have the link to this. I was hoping. Let's try it this. Okay. Let me do Target, TGT, Netflix, NFLX, and Walmart. WMT. And I'm doing this to see the correlation. Now you can see that in this example that I've given you here of three stocks, Target and Walmart are not a good mix. You would not want those two in the same portfolio simply because the correlation coefficient is so high on the two of them together. It is just not acceptable. So, I mean, you could put Netflix and Walmart together. You could put Netflix and Walmart, but you can't put Target and Walmart together because they have too much correlation. They won't dampen out each other's non-systematic risk. Drawing that here, let me draw that. Volatility, which measures the overall risk, now if my first stock in my portfolio is Target, TGT, if I put Target as my first stock and I put Netflix as the next stock, so the TGT and NFLX in a two-stock portfolio, I'll get a pretty nice little drop in the non-systematic, the diversifiable risk. But if I put Target as the first stock, and then I put Target and Walmart together, I won't get much drop in the non-systematic risk. It's just that simple. The entire name of the game and what we're doing here is to diversify the portfolio. Now, there is a base risk. Now, this is beta-adjusted, non-diversifiable risk. As you add stocks to the portfolio, the non-diversifiable risk goes downward. How fast it goes downward depends upon the correlation coefficients among the securities in the portfolio. That's why this title of this lecture is Portfolio Construction. How many stocks? And this all up here is diversifiable risk. Diversifiable risk. This is risk that you don't have to bear. Okay? This is risk that you don't have to bear. You're not going to get, you should not expect a reward for it. Okay? So, you have gotten rid of, if you're using low correlation stocks, maybe 30 or more or so will shake out about 95% of your diversifiable risk, maybe about 30 stocks. That is a lot of stocks to purchase. Because remember, you're going to probably want to try to aim at round lots, and because you'll get a somewhat better deal for the round lots. And you're going to have to watch the portfolio all the time. So what's going to go on here is you're going to have to build probably an Excel sheet with all of your stocks in it. And then you're going to have to continuously on a daily basis or weekly basis build up your download the data for the stocks work out your expected returns, your portfolio betas, and all that. If you are wanting to do your own portfolio construction from scratch, you don't have to do it as a constant thing, but you should watch it. If you're into that, by heaven, go ahead. It's going to be costly in terms of commissions and in terms of time management, but you have control of your portfolio. There's another thing about it too. I've got a stock. It is hot. Hot, hot, hot. As a matter of fact, I even touch it. It's that hot. Now, you might believe me, and if you decide you're going to buy some of that and put it into your portfolio, we call that a side bet into the portfolio. Now, if you've got your own portfolio, building it yourself, well, then you can do side bets. You might be crazy to listen to me, but at the same time, you have that flexibility. There are two other ways that you can build a portfolio. And both of them create diversification very quickly. And each of them has upside and downside to it. Understand that, again, let me repeat this. And this is meat for a test. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge. You can build your own portfolio of 30 or more stocks with low correlations. You have to tell me that part. With low correlations. It's just not building 30 stocks, because if they all have correlations of 0.7, 0.8 with each other, you're not getting much diversification. Okay. Now, here's another way that you can do it. An ETF, an electronically traded fund, and I'm going to show you one right now. As a matter of fact, I hope I'll be able to show you more than one. I'll start off with one here. And yes, I did talk about this. Yes, I did talk about this earlier in the course. S&P. Now, the one I'm going to show you here is Spider. This is the Standard & Poor's 500, sort of. It's an index. It is a single share of stock for $235.34. I don't want to say it's a stock. It is a security, an equity security that represents the Standard & Poor's 500. Instant portfolio diversification. Right there in that one share for $235. Okay? Look at the beta of it. That's the market portfolio, basically. This is what we would call a proxy for the market portfolio. The market portfolio, the theoretical animal itself, is every stock in the world. And its weight in the portfolio is the same as its weight in contribution to the world economy. That's the real market portfolio, but that's like a theoretical thing. The reality is that you can't have really the world market portfolio. It would be almost impossible to build it. But you can get these proxies that are very close to the real animal. Look at that. That is the market. Basically, you're just buying the market. And you will ride up and down 100% of the non-diversifiable risk of the market portfolio. Its beta is 1.00. Now, a couple of things about these. The stocks that pay dividends in these ETFs, the dividend is rolled back into the investment. So your yield on the stock is the combination of capital gain and dividend yield. Pretty much. And there are ETFs of all kinds out there. Now, I'm going to do something here. It would be best if I didn't pull it off like this when I'm going to. Well, actually, no, because I got a pretty decent hit the last time I did this. I went into Google. What did I use? No, I didn't want the hell one. Get off me. Oh, here's some. Here you go. Now, you would have to go back into another list to get betas. But, I mean, these are like stocks. You can buy them and sell them whenever you want. Notice that a lot of them are pretty pricey. And don't just buy something because it's a cheapo. That's like saying, well, I can get a better suit at Walmart because it's cheap at Walmart. Don't do that. Okay. That doesn't mean some of the lower priced ones suck, but you've got to do a little bit of research. What are the betas of these animals and all this kind of stuff? But they represent different things, different amalgamations of stocks put together. And almost always you're going to get a good deal of diversification right there in that beast. The thing of it is, though, that it's a stock. So every time you buy or sell some, you pay a commission. It's a stock. And so you have flexibility. You can change your mind anytime, day or night, move your portfolio around, but at the price of commissions when you do it. A little side note here, which I probably mentioned before in the class, is that we have wealth managers who talk, in the past, we've had wealth managers who talk to the finance people, finance students, and they say, all right, well, we do all this work, we do this research on these stocks to make these well-balanced portfolios, and to some extent, crap, you have to say, because they're indexers, or they're quasi-indexers. In other words, either they are just buying indexes. So why would you do it another way? Why would you burn up all that time and money building portfolios when you can buy diversified portfolios with ETFs? There's another way you can do it, too, that I'm going to show you in a minute. So, I mean, the indexers will make it look like they are working really hard for you, researching every day, deciding on what stocks to buy, what stocks to sell. Nah, a lot of them are at least quasi-indexers. They might be doing side work or maybe putting together an index with some customized package of their own. But, I mean, these indexes are right there, sitting there, these spiders are, waiting for you to have waiting for you to do them. And I'm just going to pull one up. Give me a second here. I'm going to look at one. Vanguard's. Oh, this is a real estate investment trust from Vanguard. Copy, and let me put this back over here and see if this one pops up. Real Safe. It's a REIT. In other words, it's one of those real estate investment trusts. They just buy properties, they enhance them, and then they flip them, and they pay 95% of what they make every year back as dividends to their shareholders, and then they sell more shares to do more stuff the next year. They're REITs. So many REITs now, REITs, real estate investment trusts. It's just, originally they were meant to build little shopping malls, condos, apartment complexes, maybe housing divisions. But because the legislation and the regulation has become very lax, you have REITs doing all kinds of bizarre things now. Bank of America guy came in. He was a REIT specialist. He was bragging about they've got REITs at Bank of America for forests. They'll go in, buy a forest. Well, they'll find out how much it costs to buy a forest. Then they'll sell the stock to buy that forest. Then they'll wipe it out, sell the land after they've wiped out the forest, and then whatever money that they made in the REIT, they pay 95% of it to their shareholders of record. Then he was bragging about, he said, my big favorite now, he said, was prison REITs. They buy prisons, fix them up, and then they put prisoners in them and have them work for pennies an hour for a corporation. They make a fortune doing that. Creepy stuff. But anyway, Let me pull one more off. A value ETF. Now, I'm going to talk more about these terms here in just a second, like value and all that. But let me pull this one up and show you another one. Now, this is a beta of 0.94. So understand that you can actually make your portfolio have the beta you want by putting together a couple of one or two or three or five ETFs in a band of betas that are acceptable to you, and then you just do the weighted calculations like I did there. They are just like stocks, except they have diversification already built into them from the get-go. Also, by the way, keep an eye on the expense ratios, too. How much of the money that's being made in the portfolio is going to management? That thing right there, that's an awesomely good low management fee ratio. So that's the ETF. Upside is that you can trade them day and night anytime you want. The downside is that every time you do, you're going to pay a commission. Now that's the second of the three ways to do portfolio construction. The third way is with mutual funds. And whenever you buy mutual funds, you want to buy no load or low load mutual funds. No load mutual funds and low load, that refers to how much money you have to pay to get in and to swap. Mutual funds are super diversified collections of stocks of different kinds. You can choose mutual funds that are high technology, international, mid-cap, mega-cap, night-cap, whatever. You can choose mutual funds that are environmentally sensitive, companies that are green, mutual funds that are particularly aiming at industrials, or something like, or service, or food products. There are mutual funds for everything you could possibly want. The upside, of course, is that you get your portfolio diversification, like the ETFs, and if you buy more than 30 stocks. And they're easy to buy, don't cost commission like ETFs do every time you flip. The downside is that you can't flip whenever you want. You usually will have a few windows a year, four maybe windows a year, in which you can move your mutual fund portfolio. Now, typically, you would buy a couple of mutual funds, two, three. Heck, I've even seen people buy five, ten. Just to give you an example. But, however, what you do is you create something like a balance. So, for example, in my own little pair, I have bond mutual fund and a stock mutual fund. Now, I won't tell you any more about them, but in the big times that we had the last few years, it was 20% bonds, 80% stocks. When I started seeing signs of real trouble ahead a while back, I moved it to 50-50. 50% of the funds are in bonds and 50% are in stocks. Now, I could do that only during the window, one of my windows. Now, if everything goes to heck in a few weeks or a month, I'm stuck until my next window opens. I'm stuck. So that's the downside, is you don't have the flexibility you have with buying individual stocks or buying ETFs. But I don't have to pay a stupid commission every time I do the flips and the switches and the rebalancing. And again, and you can look at these. Now, what I'm going to do here is I'm going to take this back here. Mutual funds. You're trying to make that door quiet. It never is quiet. Mutual funds screener. Now, big names, Fidelity is a big name. They have all kinds of mutual funds. Vanguard, TIAA, CREF, all these are just, there are tons of them. I was kind of hoping. Well, really, I was kind of hoping for something a little bit better than this. Bear with me. Fidelity. Really? I'm just trying to find. In the last class, I found one right away, a really nice one, screener, and now I'm just suffering. I'm dying here. Okay. There's so much of this. Mutual funds. I want to find something like that will give me a nice little spread. Oh, mutual funds, Vanguard, best mutual funds ranking. I can't find the stupid one that I was looking for. It was a Fidelity. It had some stuff by Fidelity that was really nice. Here, I'll do this. Examples, yeah. Mutual funds. List. Here we go. Here's some of the big names in them. Right here. T. Rowe Price, Franklin, Templeton Investments, Devine, Eaton, Morningstar, Fidelity. Alphabetical fund listing. Oh, wait, I found what I wanted, the street. There it is, the street. I apologize for that. I should have known that one. There we go. Now, something you're going to see here with this is that these overall ratings, I mean, that's really subjective. The risk, certainly you can go and get the risks of these in terms of beta. This is giving it to you on an A, B, and C basis and all that kind of stuff. Fidelity funds. Notice that they all start with an F. That means they're Fidelity. Small cap. That means that these are funds that invest in very
small companies, low cap market capitalization. Notice the risk level. This is sort of like beta in reverse order. Notice that these are higher risk funds. And you can go and you can see these.
I think Yahoo Finance will allow you to do this too.
I think you can go and put the mutual funds in straight in and you'll get your. There we go.
Beta 1.15,
slightly riskier mutual fund,
but you can build your portfolio just like you could before. Best Oppenheimer
is another big name in it.
Oppenheimer, notice that they begin with O,
and we could pull one out of here. This one, I would imagine, has a very high beta, OPTAX. Copy it, and we'll put it into finance here, paste.
Copy it and paste for the Vanguard fund. I'm sorry, this is an Oppenheimer fund. Oh, that beta isn't too bad. But it looks like it's a relatively new. No, it's not. Geez, that's a relatively old one. Okay, Morningstar rates this as 5 stars on the risk, and overall rating is 4 stars. Beta is about market portfolio. So the point that I'm trying to get to here was I was kind of hoping I could get to that one that had that the street had a listing of the best mutual funds. Anyway, now a little quick here. Large growth
growth means that you're going to achieve most of the gains through capital gains in the stock. Stock's going to go up in price, they think. Large value is safer. Not going to do that wild stuff. Now, the mid-caps mean these are mid-sized companies. Some of them, most of them, you might not have heard of. But they are generally in the middle of the range as far as risk levels go. Now, small, of course, you're going to get companies that are NASDAQ stocks, higher risk and all that. There's one that's a preferred stock. That's an interesting thing. Anyway, the point that I'm trying to get here is that you can build a mutual fund portfolio. The upside of the mutual fund is you don't pay commissions. You get your portfolio diversification. The downside is that you do not have flexibility. You do not have the flexibility in building your portfolio and changing it. You are going to do what the fund manager says. Now, a couple of ideas. Well, let me write them here. I want you to put this in your notes. 30-plus stocks. Here are your three portfolio construction techniques. 30-plus stocks with low correlations. You have to say that on the exam. So I know you understand that the correlation is part of the game. The upside of building your own portfolio, the upside of it is that you are going to work to build it. It's going to be but you have complete freedom. You can choose what stocks are in it. You can have your conscience drive you, your logic drive you. You can have side bets drive you. The whole shebang is there for you to do. The downside is that you're going to work. You're going to have to keep up with your portfolio. You're going to have to keep an eye on it. And it's going to cost you commissions every time you buy a stock. It's going to cost you. But you've got that freedom. ETFs. The upside is that they are portfolio diversified right off the bat. You buy a spider, for example, the spider, you got your portfolio diversification right there. The downside, and also, it's you can trade them anytime. You can swap out. You wake up in the middle of the night and you've got indigestion. You think your belief is that indigestion is an indication that that's a sell signal, okay? I saw once on a television program, and I made a poster of it, and I put it on a professor's office on the third floor, a great finance professor named Joe Trefsker. It showed a picture of the former Federal Reserve chairman, and he was sitting in this darkened place in the Capitol building. He was about to testify, and he had his hands folded. It looked like he was in prayer. And I just made a poster out of that and said, market signal. And below it, I put in parentheses, sell. You know, when you have the Fed Reserve chairman in prayer like that, that's kind of worried me there. But apparently he was just being as scholarly and pensive. I wish he'd find another way to do that. But anyway, you can buy and sell them, but you're going to pay commission every time you do. And you also notice that these are awfully pricey, too. Well, not awfully. But buy a round lot of a spider, that's going to cost you $23,000. And change plus commissions. Mutual funds. Portfolio diversification right off the bat. You have there no commissions. If it's a no load, you pay nothing when you swap between them. But the downside is that you have limited opportunities for altering your portfolio. Limited opportunities for altering your portfolio. That's, again, you could have a portfolio of like mine right now. You don't overreact ever in the market. You stay frosty. And when I moved from 20-80 to 50-50, that for me was something of an overreaction right there. But now, as I'm seeing events developing, I'm beginning to think that that might not have been enough of a reaction. But I'm stuck until my next window opens. I'm going to sit there. I can see bond prices starting to rise. Bonds beginning to behave differently. Now that interest rates are going to start to rise, bond prices will start to fall and all that kind of stuff. Stock prices are going to fall and all that. But I want to be more defensive if we're going into a recession. So you can't get out from where you are right away. Now, let me show you something here. A couple of things. Something I need to mention, really important, really important. Bear with me. Many of you, if not most of you, will be involved in some kind of a pension plan. Something. Either a 401k or possibly an ESOP. You know what an ESOP is? Employee Stock Option Plan. In other words, you can buy stock in your company at lower prices. That's wonderful and great, unless it isn't. Here's what I mean by that. If you have a portfolio, you've built a portfolio, it's a pretty portfolio. It's a nice portfolio. It's a happy portfolio, well-diversified. If you're getting stock in an employee stock option plan, what that's doing is that's unbalancing your portfolio on its own. So if you want to maintain the balance, every time you buy stock in that company of yours, you should be buying stock in other companies as well to keep your portfolio balanced. Otherwise, you could be in for a terrible, terrible disaster, like the people at Enron were at the turn of the century, friends of mine. They had a 401k, and all it did was buy Enron stock for the employees. You had these employees who'd been there 30, 35 years, a good friend of mine. He'd been there 28 years. His stock option, he'd been buying aggressively with the 401k they'd been putting in. He had over $1 million for retirement. Until it turned out that the nasty people in Enron at the top were destroying it. They were cannibalizing it for their own dirty greed with offshore accounts. And the stock fell to zero. And he was left with nothing. Nothing. That is the ultimate in not having a well-balanced portfolio. See, if he had over time been building a portfolio that was well-diversified, Enron would have been a small part of a portfolio like that. You would never have any stock dominate a portfolio. But there that poor son of a dog was. His whole portfolio was Enron. When it was over, he was broke. He took the easy way out. He shot himself.